Well, members, we don't have a quorum, but I'm still going to start, so we'll wait till I have a quorum to officially call the meeting to order. But we'll begin to take testimony on House File 1861, Representative Davids. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. House File 1861 very simply adds several activities to the recreational use liability limit law that's already there. Today, currently, we already limit liability to hunting, trapping, fishing, swimming, boating, camping, picnicking, hiking, bicycling, horseback riding. You can go right down the list. And what this bill would do is it would add rock climbing and exploring caves. And Madam Chair, what I'd like to do if I could is introduce a good friend of mine named Bill Brick from Chatfield, Minnesota, who would like to address the committee.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Brick. If you'd state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, please.
Yes, I'm Bill Brick from Chatfield. I'm an active cave explorer. Dispels the rumors that cave explorers are all thin, but in any event, in recent years, there's a letter before you that actually that I'm referring to here, entitled to the members of the Minnesota Legislature. This is written from, this comes from the Board of Directors of the Minnesota Speleological Survey. This is the state cave exploring organization. From the note, in recent years, access to caves on private land has been increasingly limited. The owners of these caves have been advised that the protections that they enjoy for all other recreational activities on their property did not apply to cave exploration. And therefore, this, the letter proceeds there. I'll not read the entire thing for you, but we are, as hobbyists, as cave explorers, as scientists, as recreationalists on this activity, we are finding that landowners are simply concerned about having us on their property out of concern of liability. We have asked that both the cave exploring or exploration of caves, as well as the term rock climbing or the activity of rock climbing, be included in that we'll oftentimes be doing rock climbing activities in the process of accessing the entrances to the caves. So that seemed to be an appropriate addition to that. The Minnesota Speleological Survey is actively involved in promoting safety and conservation. We're very concerned. We train our members quite diligently regarding cave safety. We work in teams. We have a number of procedures that we follow. We also feel it is our responsibility if we get in trouble while we're doing this, and so we want to make sure that the landowners are not held responsible for our activities.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions of the witness at this time? I have a question for counsel. Ms. McKnight, given the nature of caves, I'm sure that you have an entryway that may be on one landowner's property. What are the ramifications if the body of the cave then goes underneath another property owner's property and they don't have permission? Are you following?
So, Madam Chair, you're thinking of a situation where maybe at the entrance you had permission of that landowner, but the cave is very long, and then the person gets injured on the property of somebody who hasn't given permission?
Or under the property. I mean, I don't know what the definition of how deep a person's property goes or whatever. I mean, I'm just, it looks as though the way this is related to somebody who makes their property available, that they're not held liable. I'm wondering if you have a situation where you cross a property line and that the second property owner has not given permission. Does that have any effect on this legislation?
Well, Madam Chair, one possible answer at least is that when you cross over to the land and the person hasn't given you permission, you become a trespasser. And the duty of care under this recreational liability law is just to treat the it's the same standard that applies to trespassers. In other words, if I allow you to come on my property and gather berries, I have the same duty to you that I do to a trespasser. I don't have to warn you of anything. I don't have to make things safe. I mainly have to refrain from injuring you. So if the person then starts out with permission to enter the cave and proceeds on down to get to somebody else's land, they might and gets injured there where they don't have permission, I think the same standard of care is probably going to apply. but I'm really not sure whether trespass law applies underground in caves. It would apply in with burying, certainly, or with, you know, hunting or something of that nature. I suppose it applies underground, but I'm really not sure.
All right, thank you. I'm maybe sorry I asked this question. Are there any additional questions? No? Okay. We now have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order. I will ask that Ms. Vaught note the roll. Representative Lippman moves approval of the minutes from the Tuesday, February 17th committee hearing. Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing none, I renew my motion that the minutes from the February 17th, or Representative Lippman's motion that the minutes be approved as distributed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. I will next move House File 1861, recommended for approval and to be referred to the General Register. Now we officially have a bill in front of us. Representative Wardlow, you have a question?
Should I?
I thought Mr. Verdon said you had a question. No? Okay. I'm sorry. Anybody else? Okay, I will renew my motion that House File 1861 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is approved. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee
Thank
members.
You.
Thank you.
And Ms. McKnight.
Next item on our agenda will be a bill presented to us by Representative Meslow. That's House File 1857. I'll move approval of House File 1857 that be recommended and to the General Register.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, committee members.
And I see here in our packets we have an A1.
We do.
Amendment, and you want to explain the amendment first? You would like it adopted to get the bill in the shape you'd like to discuss it? What's your pleasure?
Madam Chair, I actually have a brief correction to the A1 amendment as well. With your permission, I'd like to explain that as well.
Okay. You'd like to continue.
On line 15, page 1, after paragraph H, we should add the language and section 257.62, comma, subdivision 5, comma, paragraph B, comma. And Madam Chair, that change, as well as the other changes contained in A1, are simply to correct something that the bill, as it initially drafted, would have actually eliminated some presumptions and some statutory cross-references. This just fixes those statutory cross-references and puts them back in place.
All right. Thank you, Representative Meslow. I've also been informed that at least somebody is recommending that you delete on that same line F, comma.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's correct.
Okay. And Ms. McKnight, do you have that wording? Would you read the additional language again just so we make sure we have it correct for the record?
Yes, the additional language after the H and the comma would be and section 257.62, comma, subdivision 5, comma, paragraph, and the letter B would be in parentheses, and a comma following that.
Okay. Representative Lippman, do you have a question?
Yes. Not presuming to know either what 256 says or 257 says on this point, is the intent of the paragraph that all of those would be required to be in effect or non-existence under Clause D? I guess I'm just wondering, on line 15, if it's before the or, it would mean all of those in that series?
Representative Meslow.
Or any of those in that series plus... Oh, I guess I'm sorry. Forgive me. Any of those in the 257 series and 256. Is that correct?
Representative Meslow.
Madam Chair, Representative Lippman, yes, it would be any of those.
Okay. Just briefly.
Representative Lippman.
Just so I understand how this works, with lines 15 through 17, you have three. Oh, I guess you'd have, well, no. I withdraw the question. I think I understand.
All right. Any other questions on the oral amendment? All those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. All right, now we have the A1 amendment as amended in front of us. Do you want to explain it at this time, or do you want us to just incorporate it to get the bill in the shape you'd like to discuss it?
Madam Chair, I have nothing else to add at this time unless there are questions from the committee members.
All right. I will renew my motion to adopt the A1 amendment as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. You should have the bill in the form in which you'd like to discuss it at this time. If you could explain it to the committee, please.
I have. Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill basically does two different things. The first one is that under current law, a man is presumed to be a child's father if two standards are met. If he has received the child into his home and if he has held that child out as his biological child. The bill changes that to make it more specific and to say that that the man needs to, during the first 2 years of the child's life, reside with the child in order to establish that that parent-child presumption. Remember that there are many other ways the presumptions can be placed in effect, but that's simply how we define that particular presumption. The second change to the statute moves the presumption that goes with a blood test to being an evidentiary presumption. That simply is, I believe, a proper reflection of where that decision is to be made. That's how we typically deal with our presumptions, is that we go in front of in this case, a judge who would apply that presumption and then look afterwards and see if there's a reason that that presumption should no longer be valid. So those are the two things that the proposal does. This does incorporate many of the recommendations that were made nationally within the Uniform Parentage Act. We are not adopting that wholesale. We are just looking at those two changes, which seem to be appropriate steps forward under Minnesota law.
Madam Chairman?
Representative Lipman.
With your leave, can I go back to the A1 amendment? I have a question.
Of course.
Thanks. Again, directing Representative Messler to lines 14 through 17, or particularly with line 17, under Clause D of that subdivision, now with the amendment to the A1, we now reference two subdivisions, and I'm wondering if that renders the amendment ambiguous. Only because that subdivision, originally it was only subdivision 1, but now we have subdivision 5 of a different chapter, and I just don't want to cause later confusion or litigation or whatever. I imagine there would be some dispute. So I just raise that as a question. Maybe that's for another day. Does this go anyplace else? It goes to the General Register? I think the author's intent is clear. It's just the draftsmanship, and I don't think it's caused to delay him, but I'm concerned that we're not pointing in the right direction.
Ms. McKnight, would you like to weigh in on this discussion?
Madam Chair and Representative Lipman, I think you have a good point, Representative Lipman, and I think we could fix it pretty easily. Let's try this on line 17 after under. You would insert section 257.55, comma, subdivision 1, comma, and then on line 17, strike the existing of that subdivision. Because you're right, the clause D reference in the current law is going back to 257.55 sub 1. Probably should be paragraph D, but we don't have to deal with that right now. With the insertion of this other 257.62 reference, it's getting too far away and it's really messed up. So I think the way to do it is page 1, line 17, after under, insert section 257.55, comma, subdivision 1, comma, and then on page 1, line 17, strike of that subdivision.
I'll move that amendment.
Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Motion is adopted.
Madam Chairman, Representative Lipman, much obliged. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Are there any questions on the bill as amended? Is there, I see here that you have Judge Davies would like to speak in support of this. Is that correct? No?
And Chair, my author has done beautifully. I couldn't get it this way.
All right. Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to this bill? Come on down. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. I am Donald Enochson. I am the chairman of the Legislative Committee of the Family Law Section of the Minnesota State Bar Association. I'm not the chairman of the Family Law Section, which was previously erroneously reported in the newspaper. But
okay. Imagine that.
I'd
like to continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Family Law Section has voted to oppose this bill. And there are just 2 points, I think, that I want to make, basically 2 points. With regard to the change of the presumption in subdivision D about holding out the child and living in the home for 2 years, it was our belief that that puts a very high standard, a very high threshold for a father who may have lived with the child for 1 year or for 18 months or 20 months, anything less than the first 24 months of the child's life, that is the idea of establishing a bright line rule is fine, but we think that this rule is too far out. We think that there are too many, far too many cases where the relationship between the father, the alleged father, and the child, the attachment and the bonding that takes place, even though they don't reside in the same home, should be recognized under the law as the current statute does. The statute as it reads is that the child under the age of maturity is received into the father's home and held out as his biological child. The 24 months, the 2 year threshold, in many cases we represent people who if the father and the mother don't live together, then when the child is born, even if they were to get DNA tests or decide, oh, this is the baby, and move in together after 6 months or after 3 months or a month after the child is born, they would not have the presumption that current law provides in that situation. And so we think that although a bright line rule in many cases is commendable, in this situation, the current presumption, which then the court can weigh the nature of the relationship between the alleged father and the child, but we don't think that it's fair to the non-married alleged father who doesn't happen to reside with the child for 24 months that this presumption be put in. In fact, parents could be parents who never resided together could, in fact, be exercising a parenting arrangement where they have de facto joint physical custody, where one parent works at night, the other parent works at the day, the kid spends half of every day in each home, put to bed by one parent, gotten up by another parent, and this would prevent or foreclose or prejudice that father from having the presumption that, in fact, he would have. So that's the concern that I think we have with the amendment to Subdivision D. With regard to Subdivision F, the evidentiary presumption related to the DNA testing, it's not clear to us why, in a statute that's designed to determine who the biological father of a child is, the legislature would want to say this scientific evidence and statistical analysis is no longer sufficient in the legislature's eyes to constitute a presumption under the law. There's nothing that says that DNA testing isn't legit. There's nothing that says that people who have that biological connection shouldn't be presumed to be the father of the child in terms of the scientific community. If it's not broken, why does the legislature want to fix it? The courts have not said DNA testing and statistical analysis is bogus in this situation. Why does the legislature want to step in and make this change in paternity adjudications? It's true that it does say there is a presumption in another part of the statute. There's an evidentiary presumption, but then we've got two classes of presumptions in this statute. There are three or four presumptions listed as A, B, C, D, E, F, and G after you delete the current F, which have got presumably one standard for the court to apply. And then there's this other presumption, which is the biological DNA testing scientific presumption. You know, why would that be treated differently than the other presumptions? And in the vast majority of parentage proceedings, there's a child, there's a dad, there's a mom. The county and the court systems have some interest in most of those cases, and then there are the cases where there are the non-biological fathers. And currently the non-biological fathers, or those who haven't tested in or had the DNA tests, are covered under these other four presumptions, and the only one who's being singled out and taken and dealt with differently is the scientifically verifiable biological father of the DNA test. So we think that the system that we have, which allows the court system to weigh the competing presumptions, is where those unusual cases where you've got competing presumptions and the DNA test is something that competes against either the father holding out the child as his own, or the person who was married to the mother at the time the child was born, or the person who attempted to marry the mother after the child was born, but for some reason the marriage is annulled. Those are the competing presumptions. And the district court, the family court, is the place, not the halls of the legislature, to weigh those competing presumptions in these cases. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Senator Lippman, was your question for Mr. Enixon?
It was, if I could. Actually, yes. there are three very short related questions. One is, it's my understanding that the 2-year time frame is from the Uniform Parentage Act. Is that true? Two is, are your views based upon your criticism of the 2-year part based upon experience of other states, you know, in enacting the UPA? And thirdly, what alternative time frame, if any, would you suggest we take, if not 2 years?
Mr. Enixon.
Madam Chair, Representative Lippman, I don't dispute that it's part of the UPA. I haven't looked at the UPA, but that's my understanding that 2 years comes out of the UPA. I have no idea what other states have, if they've ever addressed the 2-year standard. And as far as an alternative, I think that the alternative is to leave it hazy and in the appropriate case let the court determine whether if the child comes into your home for a weekend, if that's a weighty enough consideration, or if you've provided 3 months of summer vacation for the child for the last 6 years, if that's sufficient.
Representative Lippman.
Chairman Holberg, if I could ask Representative Veslow, perhaps you can give us or give the committee some suggestions about why 2 years would be worthwhile to maintain, and whether or why a shorter period or a completely different, a hazy standard, as Mr. Enixon says, would be bad alternatives.
Representative Maslow.
Madam Chair, Representative Lippman, I am actually very open to a shorter period. I'm not comfortable with a hazy standard. That's what I'm trying to fix with the statute. The 2 years is there because it came out of the UPA, but I've indicated a willingness to work with that date and even offer an amendment myself on the floor when the time came, to look at something a little bit different than that. For example, a total of 1 year in the first 2 years of a child's life. Mr. Enixon is looking at this from the perspective of a father who is attempting to be determined the parent of the child. I'm looking at it as the flip side, as someone who is going to be presumed to be the father because he was trying to be a nice guy. Somebody who, when a child was very young, even though knowing that he wasn't a biological father, said, you know, call me dad, maybe they, you know, went to school conferences, did different things. And it, as Mr. Enixon used as an example, maybe somebody who said, you know, who had the child come and stay with him for a weekend. The statute is hazy enough that it leaves that potential out there. That's what concerns me, is I think we need a bright line if we're going to talk about receiving the child into their home. And we don't have that in the current statute. We have a number of other presumptions that will help protect men who are, in fact, the father of the child. And we can use all of those.
If I might, just one more.
Representative Littman.
Chairman Holberg, Representative Meslow, only because I don't know this area of the law very well at all, are there sufficient protections in your judgment for the father who wants to hold himself out as the father but isn't lucky enough to live with the child during the first 2 years? Are there other places in the statute where they have similar presumptions or that they have similar benefits of the law?
Representative Meslow.
Madam Chair, Representative Littman, that's the situation where I think then the father should be, the person who would like to be presumed and determined to be the father would request the blood test, the DNA testing, to check that out.
Excellent.
Representative Biernet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I kind of agree with what Representative Littman says, because a two-year period seems rather arbitrary, and it seems like it could cut off a lot of fathers who have established good relationships at a later time. And I think the thing to remember about this, and maybe the value of a hazy standard, is unlike California in this area, this standard is rebuttable, this presumption. And all it does is give access to the court to have the court make a judgment as to, based on all the evidence, is this person the father or is this person not the father? And but by taking away that period or that presumption from a person who's had a relationship for less than 2 years, you're closing that person's avenue to court completely. And that seems rather unfair. All we want is a situation in which we want the court to hear and resolve the dispute. And although I'm a co-author of the bill, I think for that reason alone, I guess I would change that. And I would suggest that this bill be worked on, because that just doesn't seem fair.
Are there any additional questions for Mr. Enixon? Thank you very much. Representative Meslow, do you have anything that you'd like to add? And would you like to address the concern about the two classes of presumptions?
Madam Chair, I would simply indicate in moving that paragraph F that we're putting it in the, we're not taking it out of the hands of the courts. We are actually ensuring that it is in the hands of the courts and placing it for the judge to take a look at and evaluate that presumption. I think it simply is a more appropriate place. Even as you look at that subparagraph F and see that the language as it exists now begins with evidence of, that's what we're talking about, is an evidentiary issue. And I would submit that that change is simply a proper technical change in making it an evidentiary matter. I believe that Judge Davies would like to address that as well. I'm guessing that.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Judge Davies. If you state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. I'm Jack Davies. Former senator and former judge, now retired. I think that the point about the 2 years being a little rigid is well taken, and something like the following I think would work fine. If you look at the bill itself, it's strike four and insert during. So it's during the first 2 years of the child life. He resided in the same household with the child for at least 12 consecutive months. That loosens it up quite a bit and leaves the test non-hazy and something that we can all get our hands around. I want to make one other point that the real presumptions that we're talking about are the kinds of presumptions that we live with in real life. But if we're married to the mother, we're presumed. If we really hold the child out as our own for an appropriate period of time, then we're presumed. That does not apply to the genetic test, because the genetic test can be a hip pocket proposition. And if you want to rely on the genetic test as the basis of your paternity, a paternity action should be brought, and then you've got the genetic test as really almost conclusive evidence of your paternity. So that's why we wanted to move it out of these presumptions. In some respects, it inflates the significance of the marriage presumption and of the living together, living with the child presumption. That they are strengthened by having that sort of oddball presumption put somewhere else into the evidentiary material.
Thank you. Any questions for Judge Davies? Any reaction to the language that Judge Davies has proposed? Representative Burnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's better language, but I just want to get one more point of clarification. Has this been bounced off the courts at all, the Supreme Court of Minnesota, in terms of what they feel about this change in presumption?
Davies.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Burnett, we have not asked for an advisory opinion, okay? I know one appellate judge is a member of the Uniform Laws Commission who would like this, but other than that, I don't dare speak.
Well, members, just from experience with another bill, the language that was put before us for at least 12 consecutive months, it didn't address the concern of the shared custody, the consecutive 12 months. I don't know if how members feel about it, but if it was more for at least half the time, or that word consecutive got us in trouble with another bill that we passed, because they were interpreting it very strictly, and that if a child left for a period of a couple of weeks to go to grandma's or whatever, they were viewing that as not consecutive. So just past experience that consecutive word could become dangerous. Representative Burnett.
Madam Chair, and I agree with you, because this maybe the mushy standard is better, but perhaps it's best to lay this bill over and have them take a look at these issues and come back to us. It's come back in a simple way, but I think the court should examine it, and they should look at this language, the impact of Minnesota, a little better, and come back.
Representative Lippman.
Well, I guess I would just try to reemphasize the point that Judge Davies made, which is, you know, there are a bunch of different alternatives and avenues that you can choose, which is if you have if you're willing to give over a blood sample and spin the DNA wheel, you can probably prove if the results come out correctly that you're conclusively beyond really any possible or practical rebuttal that you are the father. If you'd like a lesser standard, perhaps if you're afraid that you might be the cuckold of your paramour and don't want to go there, you just say, well, I'd rather rely on the presumption, thank you, that we were living in the same house and for lots of familial relations or other community standards. That you'd want a different standard, but there are many routes to the paternity suit and to the courthouse, and so bright lines I think are better when there are a bunch of alternatives than hazy ones. And since there are other avenues of relief, and this isn't dispositive, I think the suggestion made by Judge Davies is an appropriate one. I'd be glad to move it rather than laying this bill over. I think it's sufficient as is.
Any other comments or feedback for Representative Meslow?
Madam Chair, I would simply say I'm happy to accept that amendment to the bill. I would ask that we not lay it over, simply because there isn't any additional wisdom or expertise we're going to have to make this decision down the line. We're just trying to come up with what we think is a fair standard. The real question for the committee is, do we want a bright line standard or do we want a mushy standard? I would submit that a bright line standard is going to make a lot more sense going forward. I would be happy to accept Representative Lippman's proposal as a friendly amendment.
Madam Chair?
Representative Lass.
Madam Chair, I like your amendment
sure.
to the Judge Davies' suggestion as well, which doesn't sound like it was included in Representative Lippman's language.
Representative Lippman?
Yep. Can you restate, and I'll did you have any particular
My recollection of the language that Judge Davies presented to the committee had for at least 12 consecutive months. Am I correct in my recollection?
Well, Madam Chair, you're right, and I assumed that a weekend away at Grandma's and so on would not interrupt the consecutive. That's a different proposition. But
And unfortunately, I can't remember the exact bill, but we had language that was related to a judge making a decision and when somebody or a child lived. Nancy maybe remembers this, but we had the words consecutive, and then we had trouble in that the judges were taking out, they were stopping the time from moving if they left the state and went to Grandma's in Colorado for 2 weeks during the summer, and so that was just
around
the back of my memory. Judge Davies.
As the person who came up with the language of consecutive, I have no problem with it disappearing. I don't think it turns the standard too mush. I think it's still pretty good.
Well, we don't want mush in this committee. So, Representative Lippman, I didn't write down the exact language that Judge Davies presented. Maybe you did, and we're taking the comments of Representative Alatz and myself. If you would like to restate the amendment you'd like the committee to consider, we can
move
two, forward.
Line 17, delete the word for and insert during. On line 18, after the word child, insert for at least 12 months. In the hopes of winning your vote, Chairman Holberg, and Representative Latz's vote.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Latz.
Child at the end of.
At the end of the line?
Yeah, at the end of the line.
Delete the child for at least 12 months.
Representative Viernet.
Madam Chair, I guess that still takes the language that Representative Lippman read does still include during the first 2 years of a child's life, so that there could be a relationship in living with the child later on after the first 2 years in which that kind of bond, that psychological attachment is there. So I think if you're going to correct it, I think, and as Judge Davies originally suggested, to knock that first part out entirely.
Madam Chair?
Judge Davies.
Representative Burnett, that really changes the idea. That what that invites is sort of an adoption.
Yes.
Procedure. The idea of the first 2 years is you know you're the father, you're living together, it's a usual situation, and it's the common law marriage that we're unfortunately evolving to, which this takes care of. But it's not that you come around later on. If you come around later on, you can acknowledge, that's one of the propositions that's not been mentioned, there's provision in the Minnesota law for a man and a woman to acknowledge that the man is the father of the child, and that's cheap and easy and simple, and it's always available for the kind of situation you're talking about.
Any additional questions? All right, members, before us, we have the Lippman amendment, which is a verbal amendment to lines 17 and 18 of the bill. Are there any questions on what we're considering? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion is adopted. Any additional questions or comments? Is there any other anybody else in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the bill as amended? Seeing none, who made the original motion? Okay, I will renew my motion that House File 1857 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Thank you very much, Representative Meslo, and your testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you.
I have now on Tuesday.
Okay. Next week, members, on Tuesday, we're going to hear a number of four small bills, and then on Wednesday, we will be bringing that portion of the Bradley bill that includes the medical malpractice and the standard of care information before the committee. So you have a whole week to look forward to that day. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Good.